I hope our discussion over the last few months about discipleship, about the powers of the Jesus way, has been helpful to your journey of faith. Over the last 6 weeks of that discussion, we've talked about six characteristics that develop within us as we follow the Jesus way. We've discussed the qualities of a heart for Christ alone, a mind transformed by the word, arms of love, knees for prayer, a voice to speak the good news, and a spirit of servanthood and stewardship. I'm so grateful for Sue's willingness to take on that challenging last one, that empowering topic of a spirit of servanthood and stewardship last week for our worship. This week and next week, we want to be considering how we actually go about nurturing these qualities in our lives. And as you notice, I want all of us to have the message translation of Scripture today, because I think the straightforward translation that's there is really helpful. We began our service reading some verses from Matthew chapter 7, which, as I mentioned, is the very end of Jesus' powerful Sermon on the Mount. We began by reading these words, knowing the correct password, saying, "Master, Master," for instance, isn't going to get you anywhere with me. What is required is serious obedience, doing what my Father wills. I grew up watching Leave It to Beaver. As you probably know, the show was about this very stereotypical Cleaver family, which included the parents, Ward and June, and their two sons, Wally and Theodore, who is known as the Beaver. Wally was the older son, and he had a friend named Eddie Haskell. If you remember, Eddie was the kid who was incredibly polite to Ward and June. He always said things like, "I hope you had a good day, Mrs. Cleaver. Thank you, Mr. Cleaver. That is so thoughtful of you, Mrs. Cleaver." But as soon as he wasn't around the parents, he was a total jerk. Eddie specialized in knowing the right password, while the actions or the living of his life was the exact opposite. Eddie Haskell vividly illustrates the often great divide that exists between what we hope about our lives, what we express about our lives, what we hope others believe about our lives, and how we actually live our lives. For most of us, there is some disparity, incongruity between how in our hearts we want to live and how we actually live. For me, all I have to do is reflect on my relationship with Deb. In my heart, I want to love her really well. In my heart, I want to love her beautifully. I have great intentions. But the fact is, my daily actions often fall short of the ideals I have in my head and my heart about loving her. I have that very real struggle every day. And obviously, this disparity exists with every one of our human relationships, doesn't it? It happens with our neighbor next door. It happens with the homeless person that we pass on the street. It happens as we think about all of the people who are being affected right now by typhoons and hurricanes, fires, impacted by all the people who are refugees at the moment. So if that's the case with our human relationships, if we're honest, when we consider our relationship with God, there's probably some disparity between how we wish our God relationship would be and how our God relationship actually is. What we want to be thinking about today and next Sunday simply try to ignore them, or we lie about them, or we feel paralyzed by them, or we beat ourselves up about them. I'm pretty sure in my relationship with Deb that she doesn't want me to choose any of those responses to the disparity between how I hope to love her and how I actually end up loving her. I'm pretty sure that Deb just wants me to keep trying. And I think that's true in all of our human relationships, don't you? And I think we can be extremely confident that the same is true of God. God doesn't want us to ignore our relationship with our Creator. God doesn't want us to lie about our relationship. God doesn't want us to feel paralyzed. God doesn't want us to beat ourselves up. God doesn't want our relationship to be fake or forced or manipulated or driven by guilt or fear. God does want us to be growing in our awareness about our relationship, the motives behind our relationship, and God wants us to be growing in our intentionality for our relationship. As Jesus said, what is required is serious obedience. Doing what my Father wills. Now, when we think about those two scary words put together, their serious obedience, you may find those two words daunting, depressing, life-sucking. Again, that is not our trying God's desire at all. God, through Jesus' teaching, wants us to know that serious obedience the Jesus way of living is the best way to live, the most joyful way to live, the most rewarding way to live, the most fulfilling way to live, the most life-giving and life-producing way to live. Jesus sought to illustrate this point at the end of his sermon with the parable about the two builders. The builder who built her house on rock and the builder who built his house on sand. The house built on the rock stood through the realities of life, while the house built on the sand came crashing down. Jesus said, these words I speak to you are not incidental additions to your life, homeowner improvements to your standard of living. They're foundational words, words to build a life on. We have a God who wants the very best for us, the very best for our neighbors, churches, for our communities, for all creation. We want to be people who are growing our trust of that truth and taking action in our lives and in our churches that reflect that growing trust in the beautiful way of life that God calls us into. When we immerse ourselves in the teaching of Jesus, we begin to embody then this beautiful way of life. And a few moments ago, we read a chunk of Matthew chapter 6. That's the middle section of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. And Jesus instructs us there about our motives. Our motives behind our caring for others, our motives for prayer, our motives for acts of spiritual discipline, our motives for sharing our God-given resources with others. We live in a culture filled with twisted motives. As people who are following the Jesus way, we want to be diligent in untwisting the motives behind the actions of our lives. We want to live lives that are motivated by humble service. Glenn MacDonald writes this: the world is disillusioned with Christians. Jesus told his followers that their lives should be characterized by love for enemies. But we have defined success as regular attendance at Bible studies. Jesus said that we should proactively extend compassion to our neediest neighbors. But we have poured our greatest energy into the battle of hymns versus praise choruses. Jesus proclaimed that our unity would signal his existence to a united, to a watching world. We have elevated the recitation of right theology to the highest priority. In the church, unfortunately, we often focus our attention and put our energies When he finally arrives, blazing in beauty and all his angels with him, the Son of Man will take his place on his glorious throne. Then all the nations will be arranged before him, and he will sort the people out, much as a shepherd sorts out sheep and goats, putting sheep to his right and goats to his left. The king will say to those on his right, "Enter, you who are blessed by my Father. Take what's coming to you in this kingdom. It's been ready for you since the world's foundation. And here's why. I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was homeless and you gave me a room. I was shivering and you gave me clothes. I was sick and you stopped to visit. I was in prison and you came to me." And those sheep were going to say, "Master, what are you talking about? When did we ever see you hungry and feed you, thirsty and give you a drink? And when did we ever see you sick or in prison and come to you?" And the king will say, "I'm telling the solemn truth. Whenever you did one of these things to someone overlooked or ignored, that was me. You did it to me." And he will turn to the goats, the ones on his left, and say, "Get out, worthless goats. You're good for nothing but the fires of hell. And why? Because I was hungry and you gave me no meal. I was thirsty and you gave me no drink. I was homeless and you gave me no bed. I was shivering and you gave me no clothes. Sick and in prison and you never visited." And those goats are going to say, "Master, what are you talking about? When did we ever see you hungry or thirsty or homeless or shivering or sick or in prison and didn't help?" He will answer them, "Telling the solemn truth. Whenever you fail to do one of these things to someone who is being overlooked or ignored, that was me. You failed to do it to me." And those goats will be herded to their eternal doom, but the sheep to their eternal reward. "Whenever you did one of these things to someone overlooked or ignored, that was me. You did it to me." When we immerse ourselves in Jesus' teaching, we pretty quickly realize that churches often lose their way. So it's no doubt that we bemoan the fact that much of the American mainline and Catholic Church is in decline. Ben Campbell Johnson, in his book that we've talked about before, 95 Theses for the Church, Finding Direction Today, wrote this as his 15th thesis. "Mainline denominations are experiencing the judgment of God intended for our correction and redirection." Most congregations, they're experiencing decline, trying another program, they try to copy some other church, they try a new pastor. But most of the time, congregations are in decline simply because they've lost sight of what it is to be the church. It has to be a group of people committed to growing as disciples in Jesus' way and inviting others to join them for the journey. As we choose to build our lives on the rock of Jesus' word, it will transform our lives, our churches, and our world. As we reflect on our life together as a congregation, does our community life focus most of its energy on helping one another grow in our discipleship? As a congregation, are we nurturing a community life that fosters a disciple-making church? Who is your Lord? Who are you? Who is your Barnabas? Who is your Timothy? Where is your Antioch? Where is your Macedonia? As a congregation, are we building the relationship that will help us build our life on the rock of Jesus' word and develop the beautiful qualities that define the discipleship to Jesus? This week, I challenge each of us to truly take some time and immerse ourselves in these biblical passages that we've read this morning. Let them shape us and form us. Let us commit ourselves to being a disciple-making community. Let us be a people that build our lives on the rock. We will find such a life to be more beautiful and joyful